This is Cheryl Murkowski, and when I'm not smoking, I'm listening to Mikey Pod on the Bayou.
Hello, and welcome to Mikey Pod on the Bayou. This is your host, Mikey Pod. Michael, something like that. I've got an interesting show for you today. I'll tell you about my visit to the hospital yesterday. I've got a magazine giveaway and an interview with my friend Chris, who is a gay Catholic. But first, I have this special dedication for Todd Spivak of the Houston Press and as a means of thanking him for his mention of my show in his article. Check it out.
Why are you staring at me when I look back at you? I don't like what I see. Your lack of character shows. I hate your clothes, and you've got something disgusting hanging out of your nose. Why are you talking to me? Please leave immediately. Where is your dignity? Please get away from me. Why don't you choke on a fashion accessory? I cannot remember your name, and I could not care less. I could have more fun talking to the IRS. Why don't you take your problems to analysis? Take your foot out of your mouth and suck on this. Fuck you. Everybody now. Fuck the telephone company. National security. Fuck the prime interest rate. Fuck the Secretary of State. Fuck Union Carbide. Fuck Third World Genocide. Fuck thermonuclear war. Fuck Mary Tyler.
Oh, yes. I feel much better now. So, yeah, this article came out, I guess it was Wednesday. And let's see. It's called Podnography. And it's in the current episode of the Houston Press, issue of the Houston Press. And you can probably see it online. I'll put a link to it. If any of my listeners feel like writing a letter, excuse me, feel free. Because, you know, if I did, it would sound like sour grapes. And, you know, whatever. But so it's all about this woman. I'm trying to find a place to look at this. It's all about this woman who's got a porn podcast where she has three ways with her husband and then podcasts about him, basically is what it seems like. And that is great. I am all for it. But is that really the like most important thing? Like, I get embarrassed with myself the way I get all. So there's all this stuff. And there are like five pages of it. Most of it is about this lady and her podcast. So here's the part that mentions me. Unfortunately, most of the personality-driven shows are dry as sandpaper. A Montrose-based music teacher podcasts interviews with local artists. The end. So, he's... whatever. Michael and Wendy Chung, who I know, and they're quite delightful. They do a record a current events quiz show that's like NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me minus the humor. Two overly earnest 35-year-old men from Spring hope to meet their spouses through their podcast. Once we find the right girl, we shut the site down, says one of the hosts. So, yeah. This is our delightful country. This, in order, whatever. I'm not going to make assumptions about what he was doing, but the sex podcast is the most important one in town. It has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, like, didn't I interview some mom of a death row inmate? And, you know, like, I don't feel like I'm, like, the greatest show ever, but I think I deserve a little more mention than that. So that's what I've got for you about that, and I'll stop crying and complaining because you don't want to hear all that. On the feature of today's show, oh, Curtis says hi. I was saying that he's the love of my life, partly because he's the closest person that to being the love of my life that I know at this time, although he lives in Phoenix. Don't you hate it when people say that someone is the love of their life after they just meet? That's what I got for you. Damn, bitch, bitch, bitch. We're about to get all spiritual and shit on your asses. So, but before we do, let's do a little Lawrence Simon. I think, Lawrence, don't you have something to say about this Houston Press thing too?
Hi, Mikey. Yeah, I'm a little ticked off at that story that Todd Spivak wrote in the Houston Press. So let's have a little fun, shall we? This one's called Dull as Sandpaper. "Let me go," said the blindfolded reporter. He struggled with the straps, but it was to no avail. There was no way he was getting up from the chair. A giggle, a snicker. "Who are you?" he whined into the darkness. "Dull as sandpaper, are we?" said a voice. The reporter instantly recognized the voice. It was someone he'd interviewed a few weeks ago, but he decided to sex up his story a bit for the readers. "I was just trying to..." "Do unto others," said the voice, "as they've done to you." That's when he heard the belt sander. Oh well, Mikey, I guess we're just as dull as sandpaper, are we? Gotta love it. Back to you.
Thank you, Lawrence. Yeah, that was an excellent story. As always, it just dawned on me that I didn't mention the name or the artist of the song I played at the beginning of the show. That was Dean and the Weenies. That's from like early 80s, I think. I used to see it at Numbers, the video. It's awesome. I'm pulling up an interview I found with him while I was tracking down that song. And I've got to thank my friend David in Canada, lifelong friend there from childhood, really. Like since we were teeny tiny kids, we've been friends. And a bunch of people were helping me, Curtis and Simon and Jesse, who else? I was like bugging everybody. I was trying to track that song down because it was the perfect song to play for my pal Todd. Okay, so here's a little story about the Weenies. It was back in 85. This is an interview, and this is actually Dean from Dean and the Weenies speaking. Dean and the Weenies, we were a club band. We used to play rock and roll fag bar and some of the other clubs. It became something of a phenomenon. I did this song called Fuck You, which you just heard, in the film Mondo, New York. From what I was able to get a recording contract, from that I was able to get a recording contract with Island Records. They signed me based on my performance of Fuck You, but when they realized I was a gay activist and a drag queen, they freaked out and found an excuse to dump me. That's the basic story. Oh, there's more. Excuse me. I'm still coughing, but it's getting better. They released my record in an unmarked brown paper wrapper and then said that they were dumping me because the album wouldn't sell. They printed out thousands of CDs of Fuck You and then decided to get rid of them. They dumped them into a dumpster behind the Island offices. Homeless people pulled them out of the garbage and sold them for a dollar on St. Mark's, and it became a huge phenomenon. That's how I really established myself as a performer back in 87, which was the year I graduated from high school. So isn't that great? yeah. New Yorkers, if you are listening to the show, will you contact me? I have something to say to you guys, a question, but I can't say it on the show. Doesn't that sound dramatic? All right, so now it's time to get all spiritual and shit. And this is my conversation with my friend Chris. We met at Barnaby's Cafe Tuesday night before my surgery yesterday. I mentioned it in my blog. I don't feel like going on and on about the surgery thing. But suffice it to say that I'm going to be peeing gravel for the rest of today. Here's Chris and myself at Barnaby's.
Okay, I'm here at Barnaby's Cafe again. This is take two. We started recording an interview. I'm with my friend Chris Poole, who is a gay Catholic. It was funnier the last time I said a gay Catholic. Say hi, Chris.
Hi.
So I thought it'd be interesting to talk to Chris about his spiritual history. Or what it's like to be a gay Catholic by choice.
Right.
Because you weren't brought up Catholic.
That's right. I
wasn't. We talked about this part already, too. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome. Now that you remind me, I, in fact, was not brought up Catholic. I guess my family was sort of non-religious. My father had been raised Catholic. My mother had been raised Protestant, but we just, as a family, didn't really go to church or anything. Occasionally, we'd go through these little spurts where we'd go to church, and it was usually Protestant church. And then, I was never christened or baptized or anything in any religion. My grandparents were, well, my grandmother was Catholic on my father's side. So when I'd go visit her, I'd go to Catholic church. And then I went to Catholic school for like half a year, like with the nuns and catechism and the whole nine years. And that was the first time I think I remember actually being affected by church. Like going to the Protestant churches with the family and stuff, I never really remember feeling anything or except for, you know, and it was felt more like a social event than a spiritual event. But when I was in fourth grade and going to Our Lady of Mercy in Baton Rouge, it was like the period of time where that age group was going through the rituals of first confession and first communion. But I had never been christened or baptized or anything. And the majority of the students at that Catholic school were Catholic. So I was like sort of in the minority. But they, because, you know, religion class was part of every day, and all the other students were going through it, I had to go through all these classes and stuff too. So I went through all the classes for First Confession, went to First Confession, and was going to First Communion with the class. And, you know, everybody's family was there except mine. And, you know, we were all in our little dress uniforms. I was like 8 or 9 years old. And when it came time for everyone to go to communion, I stood up to go, and the nun behind me put her hands on my shoulders and sat me back down in the pew. Like, no one had warned me that, yeah, you're doing all this preparation and stuff, but you're not actually going to take communion. And no one really explained to me what was happening at the time, and no one talked to me afterwards about what had happened. All I knew was that I was singled out, wasn't allowed to take communion with the rest of the class.
Now, was this because your family wasn't Catholic, or what?
That's because I wasn't.
Okay.
I had never been baptized. And, you know, and it's part of, you know, part of the whole thing with the Catholic Church is that you, in order, and it sounds exclusionary, but, you know, there's theology, you know, behind it to back it all up. But, I mean, the idea is, you know, in order to take communion, which to the Catholics, to Roman Catholics in particular, is a lot more than just, you know, bread and wine. Through the liturgy of the Eucharist, it actually, you know, through the miracle of the Eucharist becomes literally the body and blood of Christ.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, that's a major part of, it's a major difference between the Catholic Church and most Protestant churches that do communion.
Right.
Is that.
That reminds me of a little story. I teach in Catholic school, as you know.
Right.
Right. My first year there, they were like, I didn't really understand. We had Mass every month or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I play the piano in the Mass and teach the kids the songs and everything.
Right.
They were like, after Mass one day, there were a couple of teachers and the principal were freaking out and digging in the trash and looking for stuff. And what happened was the wafers, some child, like the ones that were left over, didn't know that you weren't supposed to just throw those in the trash.
Right.
And they were like trying to find the
Jesus's, and you're like, what are they
flesh,
doing?
Basically,
right.
In a trash can. So, And so that was the first time that it hit me that I was like, oh. So we're not just, I mean, it's not just a symbol. I mean, within the ceremony, is that mm-hmm. the right word to use? It really becomes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. And it's very, I mean, that's, I think, part of the intrigue for the Catholic Church for a lot of people is how ceremonial it is, how ritualistic, and how much history there is behind it. But, you know, so, I mean, the liturgy of the Eucharist particularly was something that really drew me eventually as an adult to the church, but decided that, you know, if I was self-identifying as a Catholic, then I needed to go through the process and get it figured out. And this is all about the same time that I'm coming to terms with who I am sexually. I'm also coming to terms with who I am spiritually. And I think that's why it was, why now it's easier for me to have the two coexist, is because I went through those changes at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, they were like parallel movements in my life. And so I went through the whole thing. I went through RCIA, which is sort of Catholic Sunday school, but for adults who are converting to Catholicism. It's like a rite of Christian initiation for adults or something like that. But it's literally a year of classes that you take and you learn about all the different aspects of Catholicism and, you know, the what's and why's and when's and all of that. So as an adult, I literally had to be baptized, take my first confession, take my first communion, all of that, mm-hmm. confirmed all in one night, in one day, actually. And then once I finished that process, I really started coming to terms with who I was sexually.
Yeah.
And that became sort of a conflict.
Maybe a little.
Yeah, just a little bit of a conflict. And I was actually, you know, I mean, coming out, the process of coming out to me was a lot like the conversion to Catholicism.
Yeah.
I had to come to terms with what I really wanted and what was going to make me happy spiritually. And do something about it. And it was the same thing with coming out, you know? I had to come to terms with it internally first, and then I could start externalizing
that. But it's interesting that those changes, I guess they didn't happen simultaneously, but pretty close to the same period mm-hmm. of time, two changes that could seem like completely arbitrary were these are the kind of things that help me understand. You know what I mean?
Good.
No, because both are things that you felt really strongly about within yourself were directions you needed to take.
Absolutely.
And you did.
Well, I mean, obviously sexuality is a very personal thing. And I feel the same way about spirituality. And although, you know, now in my life I'm not what I would consider a deeply religious person, I still consider myself very spiritual. I still go to Mass, not regularly. And that's probably more a result of just my own stuff. You know, my coming out did not help my position in the church that I was in. Because the first people that I told were like members of my youth ministry team and stuff like that. And they literally, you know, went through this whole scriptural thing of actually removing me from, you know, being youth minister and music director. So, because I was identifying myself as gay. Hmm. And they didn't quite understand that the church's position didn't support that. But, you know, I was young. I was 21, 22 years old, so I didn't know, and I was scared about coming out anyway, so I just ran for the hills and didn't go back, you know. So that was hard to overcome, and as a result, I haven't ever wanted to be really fully immersed in the community of church mm-hmm. as a religion anymore, but I still have really strong beliefs in, you know, the validity of the Roman Catholic Church and the theology of the Roman Catholic Church. And but with any religion, it's always hard to reconcile the two, sexuality and spirituality, because, you know, all this mess right now with... Doesn't that sound articulate?
No, that's all good. That's my trademark, is you're like, you know that stuff.
That crap.
Yeah.
With, you know, the Vatican's recent, you know, writings on gay priests and, you know, you can have gay inclinations, but you can't be this, that, or the other, and you have to be celibate for 3 years before you can be ordained, and I mean, all these, you know, and there's been a lot of attention focused on it, because it's about homosexuality, and it's a hot button.
Yeah.
But what people are not aware of or ignoring is the fact that, you know, the church's position on gay sex, if you will, I mean, is the exact same as it is with heterosexual sex, is that it's not okay to do it unless it's to procreate. I mean, that's the church's stance on it. So whether you're a man or a woman or a gay man or bisexual or whatever, it's the church's stance on it is that that particular act is for procreation. And then if you're straight, you shouldn't, you know, you can't have sex with a woman unless you're married and are, you know, going to have, you know, are doing it to have a child. And I don't think there's many people anywhere who would necessarily agree with that.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess the main thing that I get stuck on, and the reason I remember that you were Catholic, we were talking about this before the recording, was that I had in my live journal done this whole rant about how stupid anyone was, any gay person who was Catholic was, because the Pope had just said something condemning homosexuality. This was years ago.
Right.
And Chris responds with, oh, I'm Catholic, and in just a very reasonable way, from what I remember, you were like, and here's why.
Right.
And I was... It didn't really change my mind, except made me feel stupid for having said that. Like, oh, this is my friend.
Right.
But it
awareness
made me, like,
is a good thing.
It made me start to realize that there are more levels to it than just black and white, like Christians are bad or Catholics are bad and they hate gay people.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Or Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
But you know, I have a hard time understanding why they're gay Republicans.
Yeah.
I don't get that at all.
Yeah.
You know?
But then the thing to me really is, like, this is a... asking this question, knowing how you became Catholic, and you just said it was a connection that you had spiritually,
right.
The question doesn't seem to really apply as directly, although I still have it, of right. Why, how does it, how do you reconcile inside yourself being a part of a religion that speaks out against your lifestyle? You know, what?
Well, I think a big part of it is that every Christian faith, even the most liberal Christian faiths, are going to have to admit that all the teachings of the Bible and, you know, general moral principles and things like that are going to lean in the direction of, you know, the being homosexual or being adulterous or, you know, any of the other things that are considered morally repugnant in general society. That applies to almost all Christian religions. Even, you know, the most liberal, you know, metropolitan
MCC community,
even they have to say at some point that, you know, just general immoral going out and sleeping with, you know, everything that moves and, you know, cruising the parks and, you know, all the different things that are sort of generally associated with the gay lifestyle by the general public who don't know better. They're not preaching that that's okay, you know? They're
right.
Preaching that monogamous relationships are great. Loving relationships are great. So it's a matter of religion versus spirituality. It just so happens that, you know, the ideals that I believe in spiritually are in line with what the Catholic Church stands for. The idea that that there's, you know, a direct line of dissension from Peter. That the Catholic Church is directly connected to that through the Pope. The miracle of the Eucharist, the gifts of the Holy Spirit, you know, really intense, deep spiritual beliefs that I have are more in line with what the Catholic Church teaches than, say, what the Presbyterian faith believes
right.
or teaches. So as far as religion goes, you know, the Catholic Church is the closest to it. But I don't think there's anybody who believes totally or is in total agreement with what their religious faith teaches.
Right.
Someone's going to have, you know, whether they admit it or not, they're going to have some disagreement with something that the church teaches.
Yeah.
You know, Pentecostals not being able, Pentecostal women not being able to cut their hair or wear dresses. Well, that's changed a lot in the last 20 years. But, you know, at some point somebody didn't really agree with that or it wouldn't have changed. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It's like the thing that I think, because I came to having a spiritual life sort of sideways or so, just kind of around an actual religion, because once I got sober and in AA and all that stuff, that's when I started thinking, oh, and making sort of spiritual connections and having kind of spiritual experiences.
Right.
That, and that way for me, I think it's my experience is, well, I don't want to have be a part of a religion, because they are, to me, they feel rigid and sort of are trying to guide this sort of experience that that I'm kind of getting already.
Right.
Minus the connection with other people who have like beliefs.
Mm-hmm. I think that religion in general is more about community than it is about spirituality. You know, I mean, and you know, and you get that through AA. You get the community through AA. It's a group of people that, you know, they definitely have something in common, and they have, you know, at least, you know, I think it's the first step, right, that talks about, you know, you're not in control and you have a higher power and all of that. So, I mean, that's definitely a spiritual, you know, experience right there.
Yeah.
But church as a general rule is a religious experience. But spirituality is as much or as little as you want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You can go to church. Like, mom, you know, I mentioned earlier, my mom's experience of going to church was so that she could wear her new dress.
Yeah.
And if she didn't have a new dress to wear to church, we didn't go. You know, that's what church was to her. It wasn't a spiritual experience, you know? And so, me going to Mass is specifically for the spiritual experience of forgiveness and, you know, really laying it all out on the line in front of my higher power.
Yeah.
And it's totally a personal experience for me now. And the miracle of the Eucharist is a big thing for me. And actually experiencing communion. But the community of church is not something that I need spiritually. I don't need to be able to have, you know, conversations or relationships with the people that are surrounding me in the building. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because I have other communities that give me what I need community-wise. Spiritually, the people that are in that building, you know, they don't give me what I need. Spiritually speaking. You know what I mean?
Well, it seems like what I'm getting is like maybe the general answer to the general question of how does it work to be a part of a religion that whose Pope speaks out against gay people is that you're in Catholicism, you're a Catholic because of how it works for you spiritually, not because of like every other aspect of it is just something that comes along with it.
Like, it really is, and I still I still have a lot of respect for the Pope and what that is and what that means to the Catholic Church. I mean, the Pope is, from a Roman Catholic standpoint, a direct link to Christ. Mm-hmm. Because he, you know, it goes all the way back. Peter was, in the Roman Catholic Church, Peter is considered the first Pope, and he was appointed by Christ himself. And then every Pope after that is directly linked back to Christ.
Right.
And the Roman Catholic Church is the only church that can say that. And there's, I mean, that's 2,000 years of history, which is, you know, nothing to sneeze at. It's not the amount of history that the Jewish religion has. But, so I've still got a lot of respect for the Pope and what that is. And I think when people take a closer look at what he's saying about homosexuality, is he's a very conservative, you know, probably far-right conservative Christian when it comes to matters of sexuality. And so he's sticking very closely to what he interprets the scripture to say about that.
Right.
Not only homosexual sex, but, you know, extramarital affairs and premarital and, you know,
birth control,
birth control and abortion,
yeah,
and all of that. But, you know, you take from that what you want. And one of the things that people miss is that he's not condemning gays, homosexuals as a whole,
mm-hmm,
the person. It's specifically, you know, the act of having sexual relations that's not specifically for procreation, and outside of marriage, which is biblical law, you know, canon law in the eyes of the church. The people are missing that. You know, they think that because he's saying this act is not okay, that it's saying that the person is not okay. And, you know, and in fact, they're saying, you know, the church's writings and teachings are that, you know, yeah, it's okay if you're gay. It's just not okay to do it.
Act on it.
Right. But it's also, you know, not okay to have premarital sex, and it's not okay to take birth control, but people do it because, you know, we're sinners, right? You know, and it sounds,
yeah,
sort of, you know, pious and preachy, but, I mean, that's the whole gist of it. If you're a Christian, you have to understand that, if you're a Christian, you have to understand that you're a sinner,
mm-hmm,
and that, you know, you're a Christian because you believe in Christ, and it's so that you have a way to salvation. You know, I mean, that's,
yeah,
you know, that's the Cliff Notes version of what it's all about. So it's not just, you know, a blanket statement that, you know, you're all damned to hell. It's definitely not, you know, Falwellian in that respect.
Right.
Where it's, you know, if you don't stop this and repent and confess your sins, then you're going to burn in everlasting hell.
After God sends a hurricane, you're,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or some planes. And, you know, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
So it's a huge difference in that respect. I think that the Pope's message is sent with love, ultimately.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas Falwell and his cohorts, I think, are not sending that message with love, or it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the Pope...
Don't even get me started on Falwell.
Oh, that's okay. We don't need to. I think we're all in agreement on that one. Yeah. Okay, we should probably wrap it up. I think we've been talking,
okay,
for a while. Yeah, it's a long time. Anyway, thanks for being on the show today.
My pleasure.
Woohoo! Woo-hoo. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks again, Chris, for being on the show. You rock. Okay, so I've got this magazine giveaway thing to do. Basically, what it is that if I resubscribe to Paste Magazine, which I love and I think the entire world should subscribe to, then I can give someone else a free subscription. So I'd like to give that to a listener. All you have to do is so easy. You've got a trivia question, but you can find the answer really easily. It's Mikey Pod Trivia. And all you need to do is tell me the location of my very first podcast, where it was recorded. And excuse me. Sorry about coughing in your face. And sorry about coughing all the way through that interview. But yeah, all you have to do is send me the name of the location where I recorded that first podcast. And I believe that is it. Just email it to me. The first person to email it to me at mikeypod@gmail.com will get the free subscription to Paste Magazine. There's a link to the magazine. You can look at it on on the show notes. I fucking love this magazine. And it comes with a DVD of short films. The last one had this great film called Wow and Flutter. I talked about it in my blog right before that. So until the next time, later. The MikeyPod@gmail.com is the number, is the email address. 206-339-6682 is the comment line. Please call. Someone called a couple weeks ago, and I haven't acknowledged that. And I haven't heard back from you. I think your name was Ruben, and Yeah, thanks for calling, but you kind of freaked me out a little bit there, dude. But any kind of attention is good attention in my book. Frapper Map, Frapper/Mikey Squad, something like that. Sign on to it. I've had some more people sign on, and it's fun. And I'm going to leave you with my favorite song ever about Jesus, and I'm glad I had an excuse to play this song. I really think of it as, like, I guess the way my spiritual belief system works is that all of these different sort of religious icons come from the same source. So that's how I listened to this song by the Innocence Mission. This is called Every Hour Here. And thanks. A good new year to all of you. The next episode will be my emphysema being cleared up. Will be an interview with the Black Math Experiment, unless I squeeze in one more episode before then. So you can look for that next one Thursday night or possibly Friday morning, depending on when I get it all mixed down and everything. So thanks again for listening. Here's the Innocence Mission with Every Hour Here. Listen to the words. It's just beautiful.
You've been listening to Mikey Pod on the Bayou with Michael Herron. Mikey wants your input to the show. Do you have a comment about something that was said on the show? A review or a promotion of a cultural event, especially in the Houston area? Or you just want to say hi? Email is mikeypod@gmail.com. The Mikey Pod Show hotline, 206 206- 888-339-6682 and record it down for all to hear. See you next time right here for Mikey Pod on the Bayou. MikeyPod.com.